Hare Krishna. Welcome to all of you. So I'm supposed to speak on Manu. There is something called as Mahajan. Mahajan means great souls. We have a scriptural statement which is called as Mahajano Yena Gatasya Pantha, which means Mahajanas, the great souls, traverse this path. So we have to tread on this same path. And there are supposed to be 12 Mahajanas, of which 11 you have already heard about, right? Bhishmadev, Janak, Prahlad, Bali Maharaj, Lord Shiva, Kapil Muni, Narad Muni, Kumaras, like that. So there are 12 Mahajanas. And also Mahajana means from them a Sampradaya begins. You know what is Sampradaya? Sampradaya means the chain of Guru, Shishya, succession. The topmost in the chain is Krishna, and then there is Brahma, then there is Narad Muni. Brahma also is one Mahajan. Then Narad Muni, then Vyasadeva, then Vadvacharya, and then like that it comes all the way to us. So, Sampradaya means the disciplic succession in English. The chain of Guru and disciples till us, to us from Krishna. So Mahajanas means from that these people, Sampradaya begins. So if you call Brahma, then Brahma Sampradaya is there. Out of 12 Sampradayas, 4 only are active in this Kali Yuga. Rest 8 were active in another Yugas, like Dwapar Yuga, Treta Yuga. But in Kali Yuga, only 4 are predominant. You know which they are? One is Brahma Sampradaya, to which we belong. Second is Shiva Sampradaya, third is Lakshmi Sampradaya, and fourth is Kumar Sampradaya. One which began from 4 Kumaras is Kumar Sampradaya, which is also called as Nimbarka Sampradaya, because Kumara, the 4 Kumaras, they were sons of Brahma. They initiated, trained 4, the 4 trained one, that is Nimbarka Acharya, and he carried forward the Sampradaya. He gave, the 4 of them gave him Sanat Kumar Sahita, a treatise, full condensed literature, which they had made ready for him when he came to meet them. He awarded them, and with that knowledge which was there in that book, he started a Sampradaya. So you can call it Kumar Sampradaya also, Nimbarka Sampradaya, same. Then Lord Shiva began a Sampradaya with Vishnu Swami. That is called Shiva Sampradaya. And then Lakshmiji also started one Sampradaya. And Ramanujacharya, you must have heard, the incarnation of Lakshman, Rama Anuja, the younger brother of Lam. So with him, with the blessings of Lakshmiji, one Sampradaya began. And that is called as Sri Sampradaya or Lakshmi Sampradaya. And what we are connected to is also called Brahma Sampradaya or also called Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, which means Brahma is there, and Madhvacharya is there, and in that lineage, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also came. So Gauranga Mahaprabhu, so Gaudiya Sampradaya, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So today we are going to speak about Manu, the 12th Mahajan. Now, Manu, from the name you can understand that Manushya has come from Manu, as sons of Manu. We are all Manushyas who are sons of Manu, or Manav also is from Manu only. Manush children or Manav. Also, Manav and Manushya also means that we have developed man, developed mind, which can rationalize, which can think, which can differentiate between good and bad, material and spiritual, body and soul. These are very two different kinds of things. Generally, if our mind is not developed, we don't understand the difference between two things. We think all are same only. But when the mind develops, with the help of intelligence, then you differentiate. So this is material, this is spiritual. This is body, this is soul. So this is Manu. And in fact, there is not one Manu. There are 12 Manus. Sorry, 14 Manus. And each Manu is supposed to live for 71 Divya Yugas. One Divya Yuga is equal to 4 Yugas together. Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga and Kali Yuga. When these 4 Yugas join together, it sums up to 43,20,000 years. That's called one Divya Yuga. And such 71 Yugas, one Manu lives. And when 14 of them complete 71 each, one life of Brahma is over. So in one lifetime of Brahma, 14 Manus rule, live and rule for 71 Divya Yugas. And one after another they come. And the topmost one of them is Swayambhuva Manu. Why this name? Because Brahma's one other name is Swayambhu. That means Brahma is born not out of mother, only father. That is Krishna. From father in the navel, the lotus appeared. And on that lotus, Brahmaji appeared. So that's why it's called as Swayambhu. And son of Swayambhu is called Swayambhuva Manu. He is the eldest of all Manus. He is the first one of the Manus. And he ruled for 71 Divya Yugas. And from him, the actual Sampradaya begins. Rest 13, there is no Sampradaya beginning. This is called Chakshusha Manu, Savarni Manu, Vaivaswat Manu. There are many Manus are there. They all are sons of Brahma. And their job is to create species. Basically, they create human species. And in human species also, we have Rakshasas, we have Daityas, we have Danavas and Demigods. So, five categories of people are evolved. One is Daitya, sons of Diti. One is Danavas, sons of Danu. One is, who is the mother of Rakshasas?
Diti. Aditi.
Nahin, Diti one Daitya. More is there. And the demigods are born from Diti, Aditi. Aditi gave birth to demigods. And three ladies gave birth to these three kinds of demons. And fourth category is Manushya, living on earth. Other four categories are not living on earth. Demigods live in heavens and others are living in hellish atmosphere. So, this Manu is the first Manu. And from him the Sampradaya begins, which is not active now. Now this Manu was so powerful that he was ruling the whole universe. Not only earth, but everything what happened to be Brahmanda. Brahmanda means universe, which consists of 7 heavenly planets, 1 earthly planet and 6 lower planets. Total 14. And in between, on central planet, earth is there. From earth we go to the spiritual abode. But from up and from down, you don't go to spiritual abode. You have to come down to the basement. I mean, ground level first. So this Manu, there are not much description about Manu, but two things you should definitely know. Manu gave birth to one daughter called Devahuti. And this Devahuti daughter was so beautiful that even though she was a human being on earth, the demigods from heavenly planets would fly in aeroplane to just to see her beauty. When she would play on her terrace in a private atmosphere, they would come in the sky and hover around her terrace just to observe her. And at times they would fall unconscious looking at her beauty. So much overwhelmed they would get. She was so beautiful, although she was an earthly human being. And Swayambhuva Manu raised her in such a delicate manner that she never stepped on the ground. She always stepped on makhmal. What is makhmal called? Velvet. Always walked on velvet or with nice footwear. Never touched ground. And like best of all foods, best of all clothes, best of all servants, best of atmosphere, privacy, no one could see her. Like that she was raised. Plus training was given to her, with greatest of all rishis would train her at home. And she evolved to be a very, very elevated spiritual being. And you can just see, this one story is enough to tell all of us how great this Swayambhu Manu was. How great he was. Now usually suppose you are a very rich man or woman, rich couple. Then you would give birth to a daughter and you will always see a compatible husband for your daughter, right? Who should be educationally compatible, financially compatible, from the influence point of compatible, even beauty point of view compatible, majority of things you'd like to be compatible. You just don't want to have a poorest man to your richest girl, or an ugly looking man to a beautiful girl, or uneducated man to a very highly educated girl. This kind of combinations are not practiced in an intelligent community. So when she became marriageable, Swayambhu Manu himself was a great devotee of the Lord, very elevated spiritually. Although he was very rich and controlling the whole universe and procreator, and he had all fabulous powers like Brahma had, because he was first son of Brahma. So everything what Brahma had, he also had. And he understood the goal of life, and he trained her daughter in that way. Although she was very beautiful, very affluent, very effulgent, very evolved as a very highly spiritual living being. So when time came, he took her to the forest and chose Kardama Muni as her husband. Kardama Muni means he had not a single penny with him. He was ultimately highly evolved spiritual living being and immersed in tapasya in the forest. So through the sages like Narad Muni and other people, he had come to know that there is one man who is a Muni, Kardama Muni, very elevated, and they had told ki for your daughter he is a perfect husband, because goal of life is not to ultimately enjoy material objects in life, but goal of life is to get liberated from bondage of birth and death and go back home, back to Godhead. So from that point of view, although you are a king and she is a princess, it is good for her to get married with Swayambhuva Manus, that is Kardama Muni. Keeping the word of all sadhus as the ultimate, there is no argument. What is this sadhuji? Maharaj, you are, or whatever you are saying is fine, but you know, my daughter is a princess and she is my daughter and we inherit so much property, and actually some equal should be there. There was no argument. In those days, even the richest of people would take sadhu's word as the ultimate. So he took his beautiful daughter in the forest and proposed to Kardama Muni, please marry my daughter. So he inquired about the daughter, who is she, about all those things, whatever he had to inquire. At that time, you can imagine, if you were in the position of Devahuti, what you would think? I am such a elevated, you know, rich princess, so beautiful. My hair, my eyes, my skin is so beautiful, and I'm so highly educated. So at least some kingly prince should be there. But she had nothing to say. Whatever her father chose, she had full faith, my father will choose the best of persons for me, for my ultimate welfare, not my immediate welfare. And she got married. And there was no hesitation, no reluctance, no sankoch, no embarrassment in the front of society, that what society will say, what my kingdom will say, what my people will say, what my ministers will say, how foolish our king is. He is giving our beautiful daughter, the only daughter, to some mendicant in the forest. There was nothing to offer her actually. And the story of glory of Monu doesn't end here. This girl got very happily married with him. And then a girl is supposed to adopt the mood of her husband wherever she goes, whatever the culture is. So his culture was, he got married and went to tapasya, there only. So day and night she would carry the roots and herbs, carry water for him, and he would be in meditation for months and months and months together. And he completed his tapasya, and in the process she got shriveled, her skin got shrunk, her hair became matted, all the beauty was lost, there were wrinkles. Naturally, she was eating such fine foods, and here she is eating roots and herbs with her husband, because she would take only what the husband can take or will take. So that is the glory of Manu. Manu had such spiritual understanding that he had no materialistic conflicts in his mind when he chose Kardama Muni to be his daughter's husband. There is one glory, which is very impressive actually, if you think deeply about it. Today, if I were to get my daughter married, then I'll have to always see whether they are equal financially, equal status-wise, at least non-doctor, maybe engineer or something which is parallel, equal, compatible. And some culturally also I would see, oh, I'm a Brahmin by birth, so at least they should be, Brahminical in nature, or at least a good cultured family should be there. So many things I will see. But if someone tells me that is a sadhu in the forest who is very good for your order, then I will think twice. But he had no doubt, neither he had doubts afterwards. Oh, I went around with sadhus and I made a mistake, I shouldn't have done that. Look at my daughter, how shriveled she is. She has not hardly ate any food, lost all the beauty. Whatever I gave her, everything is finished now. No. The real glory of his decision got revealed later on. For many years he performed tapasya. For a father-in-law, it must be like, did I make a mistake? Maybe I should have thought twice. What happiness my daughter has got? No marital happiness, no good food, no good place to stay. I mean, only slogging day and night and doing tapasya in the forest for a princess who didn't even put her foot down on the ground. So many years he did that. And after many years, he finished his tapasya. I mean, whatever his aims were. He completed and he opened his eyes. And he had also forgotten that he had married. So he asked her, who are you? So she told, I'm your wife. And so then he remembered everything. So then he said, what do you want? He said, you have done so much tapasya. Now I want some happiness of marriage also. Then you see what happened. He understood my wife, such a sincere wife, such a highly cultured, evolved personality, that she never complained for a second also. Not even a day. Yeah, my youth is getting wasted, my time is getting wasted, when I will be with you as a wife, and nothing she asked. Just totally surrendered and she just served me. So he felt it's my duty to give her happiness. So you know what he did? The real glory of decision of Manu is revealing now. Without taking any elements of creation from Brahma, this Karda Muni created an aerial palace. We have an aeroplane, right? Which runs on petrol or some petroleum products. And a particular 1 lakh liters may be filled up and then 18 hours maybe it fly inside. But it comes down and all air packed chamber is there and a small toilet is there and little food is there available and you get dizzy, you get jet lag and you feel vomiting and you feel exhausted and you really want to get out of the plane as soon as possible. It's a pride to go abroad, but it's also a suffering in within. This aerial mansion was open. It had no fuel required. It would run by the desire of the mind. One who owned it just should desire, I want to go to the west, I want to go to east, I want to go to north, whichever place. With the speed of the mind it will go. But you will not feel dizzy because it's going with the speed of the mind. You feel very comfortable. And what is there on the aeroplane? I mean airship, what do you call aerial mansion? There are mountains, there are rivers, there are waterfalls, there are rocks, there are caves, there are gardens, there are palaces, ivory palaces, there are servants, there is tons of food, there is ornaments, there is jewels, there is herbs, there is every single thing, most opulent thing, without borrowing one element from Brahma, he created this automatic spaceship. And he told his wife, who was shriveled, he created a pond by his mantra. And he said, Take your bath there. As soon as she took bath, she not only regained her beauty, but her beauty was enhanced by millions of times. 1,000 lady servants, most opulent, beautiful looking dasis appeared from the pond and they decorated her and massaged her and really gave her a good time. And she became ultimately beautiful, much more than what she had come with from her father's house. And it is said that 100 celestial years they lived in the palace, the mansion, aerial mansion, as husband and wife. What is a celestial year? Where 6 months is one day. Our 6 months is one day. This is the calculation for demigods. When they are living in the heavenly planets, our 6 months are there one day. And that's how 100 years of life they live. So such 100 demigod years they enjoyed as husband and wife in that beautiful palace. At the end of the enjoyment, he created 9 daughters in her womb. In one pregnancy, he gave birth to 9 daughters. And by his yogic power, they never crawled and, you know, they were baby, sucking breasts and everything. They were instantly took birth and they became 16-year-old girls. And he said, now, I want to go. He was not attached to the palace or whatever he had created. He was least attached. But she said, now who will marry them? So at the same time, Brahma appeared with 9 rishis, most qualified one, and they immediately got the marriage done on the spot. And he said, now I will go. So he said, now girls are gone, now who will take care of me? So he came back again. Again united with her. And Supreme God appeared in the womb of Devahuti as Kapil Dev. The Supreme Lord incarnated as the son of Garuda Muni and Devahuti. And when son also was Siddha Avatar, he was born, and as soon as born, he was 16-year-old youth. That's called Siddha Avatar. That means not crawling and learning to walk and speak and all those things. No childhood pranks. Took birth and straight became 16-year-old youth. And immediately, Garuda Muni left. So see the power, the fruit of the choice which Swayambhuna Manu had for her daughter. And that Lord, Kapil Dev, then instructed Devahuti. Devahuti, being mother also, became disciple of the son, that is Kapil Dev, the Lord himself. And there is a chapter in Bhagavatam, Kapil Dev's teachings to Devahuti, in the 3rd canto. Very beautiful description. And it is said that the teachings of Kapil Dev to his mother Devahuti, whoever will read it, hear it, read it or discuss it, Lord Vishnu himself will come in the aeroplane made of Garuda to pick that person at the end of his life and take him back to the spiritual abode. Not once, 3 times the Lord has said. Usually when the person becomes eligible for liberation, I send my aeroplane and my assistants come, Vishnu Dutas. But one who will hear the teachings of Kapil Dev, I will myself come and take that soul back. So this is one glory of Manu, that he was so intelligent. He had that highly powerful discriminative intelligence to understand what is spiritual potency and how to select a good husband for her daughter, his daughter. So materially abstract choice, but spiritually the best choice. And materially also it proved to be best, because the way the palace he created, no other prince on earth could have created the power that he had. The second thing what Swayambhu Manu did, he wrote Manusmriti, which is the most controversial literature, which is always on the newspapers and always people are fighting with Manusmriti, what is written there. It's obsolete, it's very harsh, it is very cruel, all those things. But it is viewed in a very wrong manner, that's why people are not having understanding of it. It's like, you know, if you take my medical book, surgical book, and give it to a 5th standard student, they will say it's all nonsense, you know, what is happening over here, like, how can this happen? Somebody opens the abdomen, takes the liver out, and takes the kidney out, and takes the appendix out, and again puts it back and stitches it nicely, and person gets back to work again. This is all fantasy, you would say. But as soon as you become 12th and go to medical and become MBBS, you come to know this is all practical and possible. It's happening everywhere. So like that, when the understanding is not so clear, more misinterpretation is there than interpretation. So Manusmriti is a science for human beings. How human beings who are Manu's children should conduct themselves. Their science is there in Manusmriti. And duties of men, duties of women, and duties of children, duties of parents. Every single duty of human being, whatever human beings are coming across to, like I may perform duty of a teacher, or father, or a son, or a brother, or maybe I can become chief minister of my state one time. So whatever I can become, whatever duties may come upon me, all those duties are beautifully explained by Manu. And idealistically, some things are mentioned there which are controversial from today's point of view. Like today, if you tell somebody that smoking is very bad, and any boy who smokes cigarette in the school should be banned from school. Today, if you do that, people will go to court and win the court case, and also put a child back in the same school by winning the court case. So times have changed. In my childhood, somebody smoked one BD, one puff in the camp, in one camp which we had gone. All 8 boys were rusticated even the next day of the camp. Today if you do that, parents will go into court and sue the school only. So what is right at particular time becomes wrong at particular time, because times change. And right becomes wrong, and the wrong prevails afterwards, and the wrong becomes normal. Like In the my childhood, I remember, if anybody does abortion, by their own desire, I don't want this child, then the whole village will abandon that family, not the lady or a man. The whole family will be abandoned and they will be out of the village. That was the situation. But today every house has ladies and men who have done abortions and they live happily, and then everybody accepts it. Jawaharlal Nehru has made a law, it's legal. So what is supposed to be most heinous has become normal now. What has become most heinous, to have homosexuality with men and men, women and women, has become legal now. Supreme Court has passed an order. So Manusmriti looks from this point of view, when you are today in today's world, Manusmriti looks to be very obsolete, absolutely impractical. But if you go to the idealist situation, Manusmriti is very practical and very for happiness of human beings. If you follow that, it will be very nice. But I gave you some examples of homosexuality and abortion, how exactly harsh examples I gave you, and how they are now dealing, how the people are fighting in the courts, and third gender is fighting to have equal status and all those things. So Manu has made clear statements about all these things, and then gradually majority of people win. So majority of people have gone to court and got the law passed, and everything is legal now. But still, if you read Manusmriti, you'll get lot of intelligent guidelines to make, forget about society, make your life very happy and cultured and very much Vedic and ideal. Some people view us as very orthodox and fanatic people, and we view them as fanatic people also. When we say abortion is the biggest sin, they consider it is normal. So we think they are crazy, they think we are crazy. So this fighting between two crazy parties will go on eternally. But still, another contribution of Manu is Manusmriti, which is extremely wonderful. But every ancient scripture needs a intelligent interpreter, like surgical book given to medical students. The book is not enough. You need a teacher also. You need a teacher who will interpret that book and also teach you how to do that thing also, and make it practical for you. Otherwise, if I buy a big book to and give gift to you, what does that book mean to you if there is no teacher for that? So even if you get admitted in medical college, but you need to have a teacher in every single year for every subject, then only you graduate and you pass. So like that, Manusmriti, if not commented by a realized soul, will again become obsolete for you. Again become impractical and illogical and fanatic scripture for you. Because Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, were interpreted by Prabhupada ji in a very simplistic language, so it was like we could relate to it and understand what was spoken in Sanskrit. In English language was purported and interpreted, so we could really, really practice it very easily. So same thing with Manusmriti. But fortunately, unfortunately, Srila Prabhupada in his life did not translate Manusmriti. Some others people have done. It doesn't matter. But don't read Manusmriti as it is, shloka by shloka. Read with interpretations, so that explanations are there. So this is my information to you about Manu. What is important to know about these Mahajanas is that they are our forefathers. Like we have great grandfathers and all, who have laid down some principles, and our family traditions are accordingly. So Manu is one of the forefather, one of the Mahajan, who has led our tree of lineage of human beings. Hare Krishna. Do you have any question? Is this the last, Manu?
No.
In regarding 12 Mahajana, this is last. So you can ask me questions about this Manu or also previous whatever you have heard about. Yes.
You say that you, our forefathers have given us some principles. I believe in the life follow, but I see someone else who is not following. So what should I do? Should I try to convince him to follow it?
First, you follow it yourself nicely. Always, before teaching anybody anything, you should practice it yourself. Otherwise, it will not have any effect on others. Theoretical preachings have no value. One has to practice what one preaches. And then it will be effective because you have practiced it yourself. And suppose you practice it yourself nicely, convincingly, and you are still unable to tell anybody else, they are not getting convinced, leave it. You follow it yourself. If you can, by the power of your purity and practicality, tell somebody and convince somebody, is good. But if you cannot, doesn't matter. But you need to follow it. Most important. By following certain things, what we learn, we get a inner potency which will convince others to do it. For example, there was one sadhu to whom one mother took her daughter, her son, and said, Maharaji, this son is always eating sweets. I am worried that he will get sick. Please tell him to give up sweets. So sadhu said, you come after 7 days. I will tell him. So she went home and she brought the son back after 7 days. And the sadhu said, Beta, don't eat sweets. It will harm your health. And the son instantly gave up sweets. So mother was puzzled. Mother said, just a simple one line you told him, he accepted. You could have told 7 days before also, no? He said, 7 days before I was eating sweets. So 7 days I practiced giving up sweets. After that practice, whatever potency I developed in my words of my practice, with that potency I spoke, and that worked on the heart of the child, and child gave up sweets immediately. If I would have told him to give up sweets at that time only, he may not have followed it. And we want to have result, so he practiced himself. That is what is important. It's like a doctor having a cigarette in the hand and telling the patient, you have blood pressure, please don't smoke. You have diabetes, you should not smoke. You have a diabetic foot, you shouldn't smoke. And he takes one puff in between and says again, you understand? You should not smoke. Then you will get puzzled. You will not get inspired. But if you know, doctor has never smoked in life, his parents never smoked, he never smoked, so you will respect it. He never drinks, never smokes. He is a very pure lifestyle personality. Then his words has potency. Any other question here? About the Mahajanas, Janak Maharaj, Prahlad, Bali Maharaj, Brahma, Kapil Dev, who else? Shiva, Sadashiva. Okay. So they what happened that they heard the stories of all people in one class, full class. Ambanaman personalities, how great they were. So essentially, I will tell you, each of the Mahajan, their life is extremely inspiring. And when it becomes inspiring, when things are difficult in their life, and they have taken it so graciously, accepted everything with grace and with gratitude in the heart. Otherwise, everybody undergoes troubles. But we only glorify some people. Because some people went through the hardships and they were smiling and they were very happy and they were willingly and convincingly going through hardships with great courage. Their names only we discuss. We don't discuss everybody who goes through. Everyone goes through troubles, but some people are special. Although they have troubles, but they go through in a very gracious manner. So like these stories of these people are superlatively gracious. Very inspiring. Extremely inspiring. And they were all even simple people also and great people also. Because if you see the lineage, Prahlad was the prince of the king of the 14 planets. Bali was his grandson. Brahma is Brahma himself, the first living being. Lord Shiva is Brahma's son. Kapil Dev is Kardam Muni's son, who is the incarnation of the Lord himself. You can see. Janak Maharaj is the father of Sita Devi, one of the Mahasatis, Sita Devi. It was her father. I mean, any father cannot beget a girl like Sita. You have to be qualified to have Sita as a daughter. She was so great. So he is one of the Mahajanas. So like that. They actually give through their life great teachings to all of us, how one should conduct oneself. And whatever they went through, to a certain degree, more or less, we also go through. So that's why we need this inspiration. Today there is no inspiration in the world. Everybody, whoever you take, we take names of, either they are politicians, or they are film stars, or they are cricketers, or they are footballers, or they are soccer players or something like that only are heroes. There is no character there. These Mahajanas are filled with highest of character. That is why we should read. Today what is lacking in the world is character. Money is there. Something called beauty also is there. Influence is there. Power is there. Everything is there. But character is missing. What does character mean? There is no tolerance. There is no respect. There is no humility. All these great virtues are not there. All the big names that you celebrate and you worship them also at their homes as celebrities. They don't have any virtue. They're not truthful. They're cheaters. They don't have any values in life. They do anything for anything. They have 5 girlfriends, 10 wives, everything is going on. 4 divorces are there. And they are today's heroes and worshipable objects. That means everything is there which is attractive, like money, position, fame, strong strength is there, which is very attractive for us. Somebody has extraordinary talent. But with all these good qualities, character is not there. And that's why we don't have real examples. That's why we have to seek the example in scriptures. You may feel that, oh, these people are not there today. So whatever happened with them and is like too obsolete for us. We can't connect with them because they were from some age and we are from today's age. How that Bhagavad Gita is applicable today? What Arjuna was hearing from Krishna is too not impractical. That is not true. We can learn in essence and in principle from them how they went through their difficulties of their times. The principle we can take and the points of character we can pick up from them. That's why we need to read scriptures. We have to read scriptures. Otherwise, we will not find the most ideal people who walked on earth. Any other question? Shall we end here? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.